Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, May 2nd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. Tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. Before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you will see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions or answers or testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, if you press 1, it will put the icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And we can have a conversation. We appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention with this work is to be a service. And if you can let us know how we can be of more service to you, we are grateful for that. We've also been doing the Way of Mastery this year, and I've been reading it slowly, carefully, with commentary interspersed. And occasionally, when that happens, the energy is flowing, and it seems like something I want to go back and listen to, and that happened on Friday's show. So I went back and listened a couple times and solicited some input from others and decided that's worthy of being a highlight show. So if you go to mindshiftersacademy.org and click on the link for the highlights from Way of Mastery with commentary, there are now 5 files on that page. And it's just another effort that I'm making to try and make these tools available as easily as possible. Of course, you can still access that through the whyagain.org website if you go to whyagain.org and click on the picture of the microphone. It'll take you to a page where you can access all of the archives of the last 11-plus years of this show. But for a little, make it a little bit easier for people, I have chosen to spend the extra time to edit out just the first hour and create this separate page on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, one for all of the files that we've done since January 10th, and this page called Highlights from Way of Mastery with Commentary. So, again, just trying to make it a little bit easier for people to access this work, and hopefully step into being of service, and just one more way to do that. I don't really have words for why Friday's show struck me as significantly different, but it did just seem to flow, and there you have it. So now it's available on the Highlights page. Again, my work with the Way of Mastery from the beginning has been something that has called me to multiple repetitions of every lesson, whether I was reading and rereading it from the hardback book I have, or I was recording it into my computer so that I could listen over and over again. And that's how we're approaching this, going through the lessons again this year, or whatever portion of this year we will spend doing this, is that going slowly, going in depth, going repeatedly over the material is allowing me, and hopefully it will also allow you, to have a practical experience of the benefits of shifting your perspective, questioning things differently, learning to live in the direct observation. And if you so desire to actually apply some of these exercises in your life, so lesson 10 is titled, The Way is Easy and Without Effort. And yet, as we've talked about a number of times, the Western mind has been trained to the opposite of that, that nothing comes without struggle, that we have to fight hard, long and hard, and we have to make the world around us and the people around us give in to what we think is right, etc. And what we were reading on Friday near the end of the show was about what it looks like if you wake up to the fact that you're always creating your experience. What it looks like if you stay consciously aware that everywhere you pour your mind energy, everywhere you focus your thoughts, you're creating. And to back up just a little bit from what we were reading on Friday, it talks about how a creator who is aware of their power of creation, about the power behind their thoughts, That creator, abiding in enlightenment, knows that all events are neutral. And the events are neutral, but their thoughts about them are not. The creator, who's a wide awake to the process, understands that they create their own experience of life by the interpretations they choose and place upon these neutral life events. And that creator, once awakened, merely creates out of devotion to the mystery of that which has created him or her. The mind of an enlightened creator does not arise in the morning and say, "Oh my gosh, how am I going to survive yet another day in this world?" But the mind of an enlightened creator says, "How, on this day, might I extend the treasure of all that is good and holy and beautiful? How, on this day, might I extend the creative energy which gave rise to me and is flowing through me and is responsible for my very existence in this moment, for my consciousness and my awareness?" That mind of the awakened, enlightened creator asks things like, "How can I, right where I am, in this very moment, how can I experience the treasures of all that is good and holy and beautiful within the space and volume of this body? How can I look lovingly upon what my physical eyes show me so that I discern and extract only what is good, holy, and beautiful, and therefore experience it for myself?" That line in this book on page 126 near the bottom, to my mind, is exactly what Dr. Michael Rice and the team of Aramaic scholars who were interpreting from the ancient Aramaic of the Kabor's manuscript directly into English, they came up with a definition for humility. The word that's come down to us as humility in the English language was rooted in a word or phrase in the ancient Aramaic that meant the ability to look for and see the highest and best in another, and then choose to cooperate only with that. My eye and ear says that's exactly what they're talking about here. The creator, the individual who realizes that he or she is in the process of creating each and every moment, he or she wakes up in the morning and asks, "How can I look lovingly upon what my physical eyes are showing me so that I discern or extract only the good, the holy, and the beautiful from it, and therefore experience it for myself, therefore give it to myself?" That's the definition for humility, the ability to look for and see the highest and best in whoever or whatever you're looking at, and then choosing to actively cooperate only with that highest and best. Is there something less than the highest and best coming out of most of the people you interact with? Yes. Is there something less than the highest and best coming out of me from time to time? Yes. From you from time to time? Yes. The person who is conscious of their creative power understands that what they choose to focus on, they align with, and they communicate to the world that that's what they value, and therefore they give the creative power of their thought to it, and they create more of an experience of it. The text goes on near the bottom of 126 to say, the mind of an enlightened creator knows that of themselves they do nothing. And yet in each moment of creation, they can allow the great power and mystery of capital L love to direct their course. They can utilize time to refine their ability to hear only the voice for love, moment by moment, breath by breath, day by day, until time is translated into eternity. And the mind rests, and it rests because it is aware of its perfect union with the Creator. Events still occur. The world around you is still the world that it chooses to be, unaware that there walks in its midst one who is awake, one who needs to make no show. That one merely is the presence of wakefulness, knowing that in each moment they will be informed by the guidance of the Great Comforter, the guidance of right-mindedness, the guidance of enlightenment in that moment, so that they are no longer attached to fearing things like, uh-oh, what should I say here? Or what should I do now? Or, uh-oh, how is that person going to interpret what I'm doing? How are they going to take it? How are they going to react to it? The world is no longer a concern for a person who sees the truth of life unfolding moment to moment, for the person who sees through the illusions that their mind or their perception would show them. That person experiences their very life as an ongoing flowing mystery, as though something else were living through them. This is the meaning of my friend's words, quote, "Let that mind, which was in our Lord Christ Jesus, be in you." As you might read that quote from your Bible, that mind is the mind of perfect freedom. That mind does not belong to anyone, and yet it can be cultivated to flow through you or anyone else who chooses to turn their focus of awareness to that energy. But only if every fiber of your beingness is wholly committed to wholeness and holiness. You cannot leave a finger outside and experience heaven. All of your mind, all of your energy, all of your gifts, all of your very awareness must become committed to being the presence of peace. This is what no one can do for you. Sitting at the feet of enlightened teachers will not do it for you. Wearing certain clothes, putting amulets around your neck, going off to live in a cave in the Himalayas, none of that will do it for you. The wisest of students are those that hear the word and put it into practice diligently for themselves. Earlier in one of the lessons, this teaching told us we must learn to be very, very divinely selfish. And Dr. Michael Rice would change that to be self-wise. And here again, this teaching on page 127 says the wisest of students are those that hear the word and put it into practice diligently for themselves, not for their mother, not for their father, not for their spouse, not for their brother or sister, not for the sake of the planet, not for the sake of the universe, not for the sake of the new dawn that is coming, not for the sake of anything but themselves. This because their capital S self is what the creator of all experience created. For their self, their true self, is what the creator created. And that self calls out to you to honor it by separating your higher self, your whole self, from the illusions that you have allowed to make a home in your mind. And once you have separated that part of yourself from the illusions, you become wholly committed to teaching only love. The text goes on to say, there is no other way. Teaching only love is the only way. Choosing to value only your loving thoughts is the only way. Choosing to see the false nature of every thought that arises within you that is judgmental or negative or bitter or hurt or grieving or confused or overwhelmed. Choosing to see them as false is the only way. Choosing to be completely committed to teaching only love, which means to value only your loving thoughts and extend them continually, is the only way. There is no other way, the text says. Yes, you can learn to sit in meditation and allow the mind and the body to float free and to relax. Yes, you can learn rituals that help to focus your attention so that you remember what you are committed to and the distractions of the world do not seem to quite catch you or hook you as much. Yes, there are many strategies that you can enjoy and experience. However, in the end, it is only this, a quiet choice within yourself that no one recognizes, that no one sees, that no one hears. You must choose to become completely, totally committed to teaching only love, to being only a conscious focus on what is loving. And what is love? Love embraces all things. Love trusts all things. Love allows all things. Love surrenders to all things and thereby transcends all things. Love is this flow of life and creation. The text goes on and said, this is why I once shouted at the Pharisees, quote, oh yes, you indeed get your reward standing on the street corners letting everyone know that you are fasting and praying when you should go into your own closet to pray, close quotes. That is, to be in your own privacy, making not a show, but simply using each moment to reaffirm your commitment to learning all that love is by teaching it, by living it, by choosing to focus your thoughts on loving thoughts, by seeing the false nature of every thought you have, which results in tension and constriction and judgment and contraction from the flow of life. Here, by the word teach, I mean simply that you choose to express only love in each moment. When this book says, teach only love, this is a book which has said, your body is simply a very temporary communication device. So what is it you're choosing to communicate to the people around you? Because you only communicate what you value. And this book, this teaching, is suggesting that you might want to improve the quality of your life exponentially by choosing to communicate only loving thoughts, to teach only loving thoughts, to share, to expand, to express that which is in alignment with the one mind, the Christ mind. So the Pharisees are out there on the corner making sure everybody knows that they're fasting and they're praying and they're wearing the right clothes and they're following all the religious rules. But a great teacher like Yeshua or Buddha or Vishnu or Krishna or Muhammad, a great teacher would say, listen, don't make a show of it. Just do your own work. That is, to be in your own privacy, making not a show, but using simply choosing each moment to reaffirm your commitment to learning all that love is. How do you learn all that love is? By teaching it. What do we mean by teaching it? To choose to express only loving thoughts in each moment. The next paragraph says, forgiveness is an act through which you learn what love is. And earlier in this book, they describe to us what that process looks like. It looks like dismantling every perception you create that leaves you feeling something other than calm and peace and compassion and gratitude. Forgiveness is an act through which you learn what love is by dismantling everything that's not like love from your perception. And that carries you into a transcendence of the world. The world being your perception and other people's perceptions, which are not the truth of life. By sharing only loving thoughts, supportive thoughts, as you look gently upon the Christ in another, this is a way that takes you into the transcendence of the world. So again, when you step into this process of humility that has you looking for and identifying only the highest and best in everyone and everything you see, and then choosing, actively choosing, only to cooperate with that and nothing else, that's how you teach only love. Looking upon all things of this world and seeing their perfect harmlessness, their perfect lack of ability to constrain you or imprison the essence of you in any way. This is what takes you beyond the world. Again, backing up a little bit, when the awakened creator awakens in the morning, he or she asks, how can I look lovingly upon whatever my physical eyes show me so I can discern or extract from this image, from this perception, from my history and all of these other programmed thoughts and judgments, how can I extract the essence of what this person in front of me or this thing in front of me is and extract only the good, the holy, and the beautiful that is the fundamental essence of life and all of creation. And as I extract that, I experience it for myself, and then I give it to others by teaching only love, by choosing only loving thoughts and interpretations, by choosing to value only those that are loving. Because as we said, all kinds of thoughts are going to flow through my mind. All minds are joined. And we're swimming in a sea of energies and thoughts and souls and experiences and vibrations, and we're all connected. So I'm going to have murderous thoughts. I'm going to have rageful thoughts. I'm going to have hurt, extraordinarily grieving and confused thoughts. This book doesn't say never have any of those thoughts. This book says learn to value only the good ones. Mike Dooley has a totally unique thoughts, tut.com. You can sign up for his emails, and he sends out a daily spiritual boost in an email. And he probably still does, but he used to sign off with those emails with, thoughts become things, so choose the good ones. By that, in this work, we'd be talking about choosing to plant only the good ones, choosing to pour your mind energy into only the good ones, choosing to raise to a higher value only those that are loving and clear, that are extending the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Looking upon all things of this world and seeing their perfection, their perfect harmlessness, their lack of ability to constrain you in any way or imprison you in any way. It's just a thought. It has no more power over you than you give it. And if you engage in that process, it will take you beyond the world as your eyes show it to you. The text goes on and says, and yet all of these things rest on the practice of, quote, seeking first the kingdom, close quotes, which means not to believe me, not to have some theological notion about what God is, not to adhere to a certain religion or a certain church doctrine. None of that. This statement, seeking first the kingdom, is based on the observation that the kingdom of heaven is within you, that you are the expression of the creative energy and form. It is the very power of choice. Which pebble will you drop into the pool of your consciousness? Which thoughts that cycle through your life are you going to give the highest priority and value to? Thoughts of fear, thoughts of rage, thoughts of love, thoughts of peace, thoughts of gratitude, thoughts of embracing, accepting, allowing, trusting, whatever unfolds in life, or thoughts of fear and contraction and judgment. This is our choice. The text goes on and says, imagine reaching a point where you, just prior to every action you engage, without a ritual, without difficulty, without the grand shows and displays, without burning incense and without the lighting of 40 million candles and all of the Gregorian chants or the rock and roll or whatever you choose, without any of it, in the silent temple of your heart, you make a choice. Here's a suggested choice to make. Quote, in this moment, I am going to discover what it means to teach only love. Close quotes. Imagine reaching a point where just prior to every action that you engage in, you choose without any ritual, without any show, in the silent temple of your own heart, you choose to make a simple choice. In this moment, I am going to discover what it means to teach only love. It might be a simple smile. It might be to let your eyes gaze at the beauty of a flower and say, ah, it is very good. It might be to eat your breakfast and actually be there while you are eating it, instead of letting your mind run off to the office. Here, beloved friends, is the way to the truth, capital T truth, that sets you free. You must absolutely become wholly committed to being awake for no other reason than that you have realized you have no other choice. You've already made them all, and none of them have freed you from pain. They've all led to more pain. The next section is titled, Recognizing the Presence of Christ Within. And this is the way to talk about it, because the Christ mind, the one mind, the spark of divine light, is within you. That's what all of this work is about. You don't have to create it. You don't have to go buy it from somebody. You don't have to earn it by doing the proper rituals or belonging to a certain group or a church. It's there. This work is about getting you to wake up to the truth of what is true always. Yourself is calling out to be recognized for what it is, an awakened master. The presence of Christ in you that would, if you allow it, inform every step, inform every decision, inform the quality of your perception, inform the very nature of your forever expanding, transparent consciousness. For it is your consciousness alone that can reach out and embrace all created things until you literally realize that all things have arisen from within you, from within your consciousness. That is how big you are. That is how grand you are. Because that is all that you are, consciousness. You are the ocean from which waves and waves of dimensions and worlds have arisen. That mind, capital M mind, is what you are required to let be in you. To be awakened to the truth that that mind is in you and that that mind is the source of your creation, your awareness, and how you create actively moment to moment. That mind is what you are required to wake up and realize is in you, even as once it was within me as I walked upon your earth. Please, do not make it difficult. Allow. Earlier in this work, they talked about how the Western mind has been programmed through the families, through the culture, through the language to strive. Strive for this, strive for that, strive for spirituality, strive for enlightenment, strive for the acquisition of goods, strive for relationship. And this work is asking us to put down the striving and pick up allowing, learning to allow. And here's another little pointer near the bottom of page 128. Please do not make it difficult. Recognizing the presence of the Christ mind within you is the title of this section. Recognizing it, not building it from scratch, not buying it from somebody after you've worked for years to amass millions of dollars, allowing yourself to recognize that the mind of the Christ is your inheritance. It is within you. It is what allows you to be awake and aware in consciousness each and every moment. The text goes on to say, whenever you hear a teacher teaching this or a teacher teaching that, ask yourself this, quote, do they offer me simplicity or complexity? Do they offer an extraordinary peace? Or must I have several trappings around me? Do they give me complex meditations and prayers and things to do? Or do they simply remind me of the truth and ask me to rest in it? Will they tell me that I need to go on 1,000 pilgrimages? Or do they remind me that when I make my cup of tea in the morning, heaven is present? If I will simply remember who is making the tea, Christ is. Be therefore not distracted, for in the end of this age there is coming forth a whole smorgasbord of those who profess to be teachers of enlightenment, who will guide you into all knowledge. Look carefully. Do they demand of you that you follow them? Do they demand of you that you give up your own discernment? Or do they ask you to look deeper within yourself? Do they ask you, what are you feeling? What do you think? What do you want to do? Are you willing to accept responsibility for the effect? What do you believe? What do you want? You are free. I, Yeshua, am equal to you. I am just in the role of temporary guide for you, and someday you will be far beyond me. How do these teachers speak? What do they teach? Is there fear filtering into their words? Do they believe that they must teach you to control the forces of nature, the forces of the mind? Do they teach you to protect yourself against evil? There are many who profess to be teachers of enlightenment, and there will be many more. When you hear these things coming from them, turn and flee from their presence, for you do not need them. You are already beyond them. Ask only this: how can I extend my treasure this day? How can I extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful? What's mine to do in this moment to be a blessing to myself and others? How can I bless creation in this moment? How can I see past the perception which tells my mind to judge and fear and contract and see only love, and then choose to focus only on the loving thoughts that are available to me in that moment, and thereby teach only love? How can I extend my treasure this day? How can I lay up treasures where moth and dust cannot corrupt? That is, lay up treasures where time and materiality and the body and the world cannot hook you. Rather, lay up treasures that are in heaven. That would look like the process of forgiveness, peace, unlimitedness, recognition of your unlimited power, that which brings you joy, that which puts a smile on your countenance. Lay up for yourself these treasures, and all things shall be added unto you. For there is a way of being in the world that requires no planning, no striving, though to enter it does require the relinquishing of fear. To enter it requires a commitment to teach only love until the mind is again whole and undivided. There is a way of being in the world that is not here at all. The body still abides. Yes, you still act just like everybody thinks and acts. That is, they know your name. They know where you live. They know which car you're supposed to drive. And you know that. You know whom to go home to at night. But through all of it, there is pervaded in your consciousness a transparency as you look upon all of these things. Whatever feelings arise, they come and go. But somehow, you begin to recognize that you are much larger than the things that come and go, that you are watching a dance of shadows, a dream gently passing by that is gone in a cosmic split second. This does not become a way in which you deny your experience. Rather, it gives you the freedom to embrace it and live it totally with passion, with purpose, with power, and in perfect freedom. No anxiety, no pressure, just the willingness to dance in the world of dreams while remaining awake. If indeed you have been putting in your 5 minutes a day, well, you're already carrying yourself closer and closer, or perhaps more and more deeply, into the transparency I am describing for you. And that transparency grows to a point. You might think of it as critical mass, when suddenly you, as a beingness, can no longer even hold the thought of yourself as a body in space and time. Then the body simply dissolves away, and your consciousness will never experience the limitations of the body again. However, you will bring the joys that bodily experience taught you, you'll bring them with you, for they are imprinted on your consciousness forever. This earth is a beautiful place. However, it is only a pale reflection of the radiant, transcendent beauty of the good and the holy and the beautiful that pervades the Creator's creation. Love it, embrace it, embrace this world, enjoy this world, thank it, but do not cling to it. Learn then to teach only love. What does that mean? To choose to value only the loving thoughts that arise. Here's a simple practice. Now, to build on what you have been doing, if you've been doing your 5 minutes a day sitting in a chair as a creator, we would simply ask that you add this very simple practice when you sit in your chair for 5 minutes, abiding as a Christ, remembering the truth that has set you free. Then begin to ask yourself one simple question. This day, how can I extend my treasure? How can I add to that which I am storing up in the heaven of my consciousness? Immediately, you will begin to get pictures. An old friend who needs a phone call. Someone to write a letter to. It could be something as simple as picking up your cat, placing it upon your lap, and seeing all of infinity in that living being, and feeling the joy that comes as you run your hands along its fur. It could be something as grand as going to Washington, D.C. in order to send a blessing to your president. It does not matter what it is, because that voice of love, capital L love, will be guiding your actions. It may be as simple as turning to your spouse and saying, you know, I appreciate you. Whatever it is, let the day not fade away until that action is accomplished, or at least set into motion. So the great question is this: am I willing to trust the flow from my Creator's mind through my own as that which empowers me to extend my treasure? Yes, it does seem a little It does mean living unlike the way the world lives. Yes, it does mean going against the grain. You may seem to need to apply more energy to it at first, but as you get the momentum of your mind to turn in another direction, to shake loose all of the sludge that has settled into your consciousness, it gets easier and easier. But I can promise you, if you will take up such a path, simply, joyfully, gently, patiently, the end of your journey is certain. If you choose a path filled with magic and many complex strategies, the end is not so certain. The way is easy and without effort. Quote, I am already that which I seek. I need only allow it to guide me. While this body lasts, I will allow it to be a communication device that extends the treasure of perfect love, perfect safety, and perfect peace to all who enter my house. And in this work, your house is your field of energy. It's the expanse of your presence. Toward the end of your 5 minutes, look at yourself from within your mind's eye as though from the day you began this course until now, you have journeyed around in a circle. You have journeyed through many influences of energy. You have engaged yourself in relationship with countless brothers and sisters. You have had thousands of visions and dreams and revelations that came into your consciousness. You have had umpteen million opportunities to be disturbed and lose your peace. You have been like a sojourner, the prodigal son or daughter who has gone out through the realms of human consciousness, and now you see yourself completing the circle. So let's celebrate your rebirth as Christ. Count the days from this day until the 25th of December. Or if you're reading these words in another time of the year, simply choose a date approximately 7 weeks into the future. You will be signifying for yourself the day of your rebirth. Let each day be seen as a step, a pilgrimage, a completion of a very ancient circle. Let each day be one in which you reaffirm your commitment to releasing everything unlike love. Everything unlike love that arises within yourself, that crosses your mind as a thought. So as you come to December 25th, or whatever your appointed day is, 7 weeks in the future, you will dedicate yourself to being prepared for it. On December 24th, or on the eve of your chosen day, go to bed early enough and in quiet and in prayer so that you can awaken before the first rays of a new day that come to caress the earth. Take yourself outdoors, even if you must bundle up the body. Make haste to a place of vision, a place where you can look out over wherever you live. Let that represent your ability to look out over all of creation. And then turn to face the direction of the arising sun and go into a simple prayer. Close your eyes. Realize that you see nothing through the physical eyes anyway. Stand with the arms at the sides and the palms open. Breathe deeply into the body. Relax the mind and begin to simply say within yourself, quote, death has occurred, and now the birth of Christ is at hand. Father, I accept fully, completely your will for me. Your will is only that I be happy, and I use time to extend my treasure. Now, I receive the warmth of your light, and your love, close quotes. Then merely stand and wait and receive the warmth of the light. For rest assured, even if the skies are cloudy, as the sun arises, there is a change in the energy of the air. If you are quiet, you can feel how it begins to affect the energy sphere of your awareness and of your body. Drink that solar energy in through every cell of your body. Drink it in until you feel your very spinal column warmed. And when the whole body, from the crown of the head to the tips of the toes and down through each finger, is filled with light, then gently open the eyes of Christ and let yourself see a new world, a new creation, a new beginning. Now the journey to the kingdom is over, and the journey within it can begin. Graduate school is just around the corner. When you get back to your home on that December 25th morning or the morning of your chosen day, do something that celebrates your birthday. Your birthday, not mine, yours. I can handle taking care of my own celebration. But you, be joyous and celebrate in whatever way you wish, and know that the new age, the new day has dawned. Never again will you ever be able to convince yourself that there is an excuse for believing in anything that is less than the enlightened Christ consciousness. Regardless of when you may be reading these words or hearing this, the same truth applies. Choose a date, approximately 7 weeks in the future, to signify your day of rebirth. And surrender to this process as I have described it each day until that day arrives. Your instruction is given. Reflect well on what has been given, for we have been stepping into some very simple but very powerful initiations that were once given to me as I too awaken to the reality that only Christ dwells within me. Beloved friends, reflect well on all that has been shared. Do not take it lightly, even though it is only filled with light. Consider well each phrase, each sentence, and even the spaces between the words, for in those spaces, revelations can come. It is time to birth fully your conscious awareness of the presence of the peaceful Christ within you. Peace be unto you always. As always, I am with you. Amen. So that's the end of Lesson 10. That's the invitation to step into the awareness that only the mind of Christ allows you to be awake and aware, to be conscious in the body, in the world. And the more you choose to awaken to that consciousness, the more you ask it to show you how to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful, the better your life will get. And that's the end of our time today, so I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff that we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Chiam. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you as well. You're quite welcome and deserving, and have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today's Monday, May the 2nd. 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in, I'll direct you to our website, which is whyagain, whyagain.org. And, you know, look around. We now have several new things. And so just, you know, click around, test them out. The Apple hopefully will be approved before the day's out for the app on the iOS. It's already been approved on the Android out of the Google Play Store. So go to either of your stores and get the update on that. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here as we move forward in this awesome conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness. And if anyone has a topic you'd like to push the show in the direction of, a question or a thought, push one and raise a hand. Otherwise, I'm going to rock on and talk a little bit about laws of living. But I thought I'd just open the space for somebody who's out there that's got a burning question or comment or something to share, and before I launched into laws of living. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody there with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet, so go for it.
Uh-huh. Cool. Well, then let's talk about laws of living and possibilities for human beings. You know, it's interesting how all of the key liberating ideas that were offered, or maybe not all, but majority of the key liberating ideas that were offered in the Aramaic language 2,000 years ago and longer, that the key ideas were degraded from what they originally meant and the original possibilities, the original function of the words that were used. When it came into Greek, it's like, let's imagine that you're a university professor and you teach advanced physics. And what you're going to do is you're going to go into a postgraduate course where people have been studying physics for 6 years. You know, they've gotten their doctorates in physics, and now you're going to talk to them about physics. And you send in a child of 5 to do the lecture. Now, you may be able to explain to a child of 5, you know, you may take, you know, we've all seen one of those little machines where there are 6 or 8 balls hanging from a framework, and you pull one and it falls down and it hits the next one, hits the next. You know, there's a physics principle there, the transfer of energy. And so let's say you're going to talk to this postgraduate group about the transfer of energy, and there's your model. And you explain to the child of 5 what that transfer of energy means, and now that child of 5 is going to go in and give you a lecture. That would be like listening to Yeshua in Greek, you know, on this topic where there's so many key words. You know, Yeshua says the power of life and death is in our words. What does that mean? It means if you're using words that represent frequencies of death, you're going to kill yourself. If you're using words that represents frequencies of life, represent frequencies of life, you're going to move into greater and greater states of aliveness, greater and greater possibilities. And almost every key word has had its meaning changed. So, you know, forgiveness has become pardoning. Love has become sexual athletics, or something I'm going to do to you instead of who I am. You know, idea after idea after idea has lost its original meaning. So in the Aramaic language, this word law has nothing to do with the Greek idea of I'm the law, and this is the rule of me, the superior, and you better follow my rules. Nothing to do with that type of insanity. You know, kings want us to believe law is the ruler superior. They're the superior. They have the divine right. And boy, you look at some of the history, and it's so bizarre what some of these people did under, and most people just sucked it up. No, these are the kings. You got to go fight and die for the king. He's, you know, Yeah, well, he may be building the equivalent of $100 billion palace while you're living in a $300 shack, but, you know, you got to support the king. And the king's law says he needs that money to build that $100 billion palace. And I'm talking literally about back in the times of Louis XIII. We just finished watching an interesting video series on Netflix called Versailles. And I forget what they said the property would be worth today, but, you know, hundreds and hundreds of billions. In any event, you know, people believed that the king was a divine heir and was there to, and the scriptures even said, you know, obey the king. Well, talk about degraded thought. So when you get back to the Aramaic, law is simply a word that represents the explanation of how things work. That's all. The law of gravity simply explains how the gravity force works. Isn't some superior sit up there and said, and from here on in, when you get into a certain, you're going to fall. No, it's nothing to do with that, but rather is simply how things work. And so when you start to approach the whole scriptural dialogue from the point of view of it's an effort on the part of a relatively primitive mind, although a mind perhaps not so stuck in the intellect as we are today, efforting to explain how things work. And the processes that they had developed are beyond monumental and beyond genius. I remember doing a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and there was a psychologist there. And it had been about the sixth or seventh time that she had done that workshop. And she came up to me after the workshop. She's like, Michael, when psychology develops, what was taught in the Aramaic 2,000 years ago, I mean, it's going to revolutionize everything, because our field doesn't have a clue. And yet Yeshua lays it all out from start to finish. But sadly, when it's translated into Greek, like, for instance, we're told that they asked this man, Yeshua, what's most important in the law? And we're given a kindergartner's answer for a postgraduate level question. The question, in essence, is, how do we function as human beings? And Yeshua does not say what the five-year-old Greek translation would say. Oh, it's the act of loving God and loving your neighbor, you know, kind of just like you do yourself. Well, that would be a five-year-old's response. What he said was, and I'll give you the long form, folks, there's a filter and a gateway in the frontal lobes of your brain. It's called Rachma. If that gateway is open, then there is an entry point for your human life, which is love, to come into your form and express as the fact of what it is. It's got nothing to do with a verb of loving our neighbors or loving God. It informs us that there is this gateway that, when open, means you have access to the truth of who you are as love. You get to function as a human being, which is love. Now, it's interesting, we live in a world that uses this excuse, oh, well, I'm only human, when people fall into lower behaviors. Oh, I'm only human. Well, no. Actually, if you were functioning as a human being, you'd be at the top form of human life. You wouldn't be using it as an excuse.
And there's a second function for this, what he was describing with this word rachma, the gateway. It's also a filter. And what it does is it inhibits the flow of intentions keyed to hostility and fear. Negative and destructive intentions are inhibited by the activity of rachma. Like, you can't even go there. You go back and, you know, I can remember being a kid and you heard the stories of the saints and some of the things they did. And you go, how is that possible? Well, when you know that there's a thing called rachma that ties you in and you're functioning strictly straight out of the state of being love, then that stuff makes sense. We're not locked into an hostility and fear-based mind. We're locked into a love-based state of being. So we have this filter that inhibits intentions that are destructive or negative. And the reason why that's, which means that the only intentions available at that point are those that are based in love. The reason that's important is because what drives human behavior is based in goals. And the raw material for goals are those intentions. So you're saying you protect the quality of your intentions by having rachma active. You have a gateway that brings active human life into your form. And then he says what I consider to be the 11 most important words I've ever spoken. In fact, I've been working on a book that started out with that title. It's now called The End of Suffering. But if anybody's listened to it, we talked about it a few weeks ago, The End of Suffering, and Jeannie put a link in the notes. If you've listened to it, I'd love to hear your thoughts. But he gave a formula, not sort of some sort of a magic blessing, not something, you know, I'm going to fix it for you. But he gave us a formula for functioning as human beings, for functioning out of love and having goals that are only linked to that state of being. Now, you listen to Paul sometimes later, and he talks about love. And if you read and you understand the meanings of words, what words are reflecting, you read that statement that, you know, many people have, you know, they say it's so beautiful that they've made their wedding vows out of it. But if you really stop and listen to the words and you realize that words are reflective of the content of a mind, you'll notice that the most of what he wrote about is what it's not. Oh, it doesn't envy. It doesn't this, it doesn't that, it doesn't that. Almost the whole list is about what it doesn't do. And you can tell that in the file in Paul's mind, there's a whole lot of hostility and fear in the file on love. And you look at a point where the man admits, you know, why is it the things that I would do, you know, the things I know from being, that I know are right, why is it that I can't bring them into behavior? Why is it that I do the things I hate? He had no idea how to transition from what rachma meant there and how to transition into goals, driving perception, driving behavior. So he doesn't know how to function as a human being. And he's very frustrated. You know, he's stuck. He's like, you know, it's kind of like, well, man, when I'm under stress, here I am doing the exact opposite of what I said I wanted to do. What's wrong with me? Well, nothing's wrong with you. You just haven't done your work. You don't have the tool of forgiveness. You don't understand what forgiveness means. You're telling, there's another degraded word. You're telling people that forgiveness is about letting other people, oh, forgive them, let them off the hook, rather than, oh, they brought up some rage or fear or pain in you, then forgive your rage or fear or pain. Remove that from your structure. You know, the whole conversation has just been so degraded. And yet, it's based in beyond postgraduate work. And when we come out of the Greek, well, if Yeshua sat in most circles where they speak from Greek translations, he'd say, that's all Greek to me. Because it is. It's just, it's lost in the language of a child of five, and we're trying to understand postgraduate physics. And then once you start to string these ideas together from the Aramaic, you get a key into what the real state of being is about and what the real possibilities are. Then what he lays out are tools for accessing that state of being, for living in that state of being. The core tool, the key tool, being the removal of that which is based in hostility or fear, that which does not belong within the structure. So forgiveness, being a word that describes a methodology by which you remove. You know, Paul says, why is it the things I would not do are what I do? He's got realities. He's got content in his mind. He has no idea how to forgive it, no idea how to remove it. So it drives his behavior. He loads the gold, bang, drives his behavior. And he doesn't know how to change that because he didn't understand the technology of forgiveness. That's how quickly it disappeared 2,000 years ago. And I certainly understand why people don't want anything to do with forgiveness, because most people interpret when there's a problem in their lives, blame, and their blame is usually about somebody else. But if I'm not blaming somebody else, then the blame comes back on me. And most people are like, no. I don't want to look at myself being responsible for that. So what we're working to do with these tools is to make them as clearly understood in this language where the ideas, and sadly, if we were just starting from scratch, oh, it would be so much easier. But still have all of these errant ideas about so many of the key things, errant ideas about law, errant ideas about love, errant ideas about forgiveness. So our goal is to bring the tools into the English language as clearly as we can and undo the errant definitions and restore. Bring us back to the state of being. And then if you move through life and you load a goal that brings up something based in hostility or fear, okay, so how do you do this forgiveness thing? How is it done? And then to move forward and actually step into and do it. There are a couple of new pieces of information on the website, actually with the Hear My Voice radio or book study club. We have done two sessions with their participants where we did a worksheet live. And those two sessions are available in the special radio show section. I believe, is that correct, Jeannie, that that's where they're located?
They are, if you go to the website and click on either schedule, and it'll take you down to the Global Online Book Club, or you can scroll down to events. It's in both places. And then when you click on that, then it gives the archive shows. Is that what you meant?
Oh, cool. Yeah. The archive of the two worksheets that we did with the Hear My Voice Book Study Club.
Yes, they're out there.
Oh, cool. Okay. So there are two live worksheets that we did there with two different people who were totally and completely in the dark about forgiveness. We started right from scratch with them. So they're both good introductions for someone to start to build the brain cells for what forgiveness is about and how it's done. And so those archives are available. And then there are at least, I don't even know now, 20 or so radio shows where either Dr. Tim Hayes or myself or Jeannie has walked somebody through a worksheet. So there are lots of instructions on the how-to of forgiveness. And my offering would be that if you're going to do anything, about your healing process, about your spiritual development, whichever direction you want to come from, the most important thing you can do is to acquire the skill of understanding what drives your pained perception and how to collapse that perception. Now, the part of us that's called ego doesn't want anything to do with that, because that perception is like its creation, and you know, it wants to hold its, even its most painful generated states as perfect and wonderful, with blame for everyone and no desire to change. But when you realize that hostility, fear, and pain never belong within a human system, and you acquire the skills and use the tools that bring you back to that state, that original state of being, piece by piece by piece, everything changes. And so our objective is to bring that forward in a way that, yes, even a child of 5 can understand it. And if you download the app, if you go to your app store on your phone and you type in Heartland, one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Heartland, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. If you download it, then you can do the forgiveness process right there on your phone. There are two different versions of the worksheet, but there's also a game called the Dragon Klingon game that is a modality for introducing forgiveness to young children. You know, Ari is 3.5. She'll be 4 in August. 4 years, she'll have been circling the earth by then. And she's already fairly well acquainted with, when she's an upset, she's got a goal. You know, there's something that you want. You know, notice, sweetie, that you're only upset when you want something that you, it seems you can't have or you can't get to. And you could go on and be upset and in pain about it, or you could let go of that goal and free yourself from that pain and allow yourself to move into that pain and be with it. And that's where you breathe. And she is just the most amazing little creature, reminding people to breathe. She even tells her dolls to breathe. It's just, the other day when Ginny was teaching her, she was asking to learn more about orthobiotomy, which we've introduced her to. And she was teaching her doll, or little, her dog, to breathe and how to do, and she's doing still point breathing with the dog. So, you know, a child of 4, 3.5 can take that on and use it in their lives. And it's something I sure wish at 3 or 4 I had been introduced to and brought up with. Would life have been a different proposition? And so, law, whenever you hear that word, translated a la Aramaic understanding of, oh, this is how something works. Now, you've got rules and regulations in the society. You've got ordinances. No human being has ever passed a law. They talk about lawmakers in Washington. There are no lawmakers in Washington. There is only one lawmaker. And that's the one who set up how it works. And our expression and understanding of how it works, yes, it changes from time to time. But there were some amazing understandings 2,000 years ago that if they were in common knowledge today, we would not be in the mess our world is in with the conflict and the pain and, you know, I mean, literally on the verge of civil war. So time for a wake-up call. And if that resonates anything for you, if it sets up a question, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563 1-800-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you'd like to have a conversation, all you do is push 1 on your phone. That'll put a hand up in the control panel, and Jeannie will know that you want to talk to us. And so, Miss Jeannie, whose hand is up?
There are none. We have 34 minutes. Press 1. And we have a hand.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
610, I believe it's Susan.
Okay. Hi, guys.
Welcome.
Very good intro, Michael. Hi. First, a report, and then a couple of questions. I didn't do a worksheet yesterday at all. Not one. I needed a day off.
Ooh. had you fulfilled your 5 a day till then, at least?
I had, and I've done 7 today so far.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're very fruitful. But yesterday, I just went fallow, and I thought, I bet Michael won't mind. Especially since you just said that God makes the laws. you can't make a law about that. So anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
And it probably sounds like you were following your guidance to just let yourself be in a quiet space yesterday. That's awesome.
It was very
like
quiet.
Like the field lies fallow.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. So I'm finding that some worksheets just need repeating over and over and over again. Certain basic things, I'm triggered by certain things over and over. And
right.
I'm not sure if, I mean, I understand what's happening, but somehow I'm not, I guess I just really, really want to be right in a couple of cases. Or something I find so disturbing, you know. Well, for instance, one of them is when I go on a shop, at Monday is my shop day at Costco, and I see people pushing, you know, these big orange carts around piled high with single-use bottles of water, and I have to do my breathing, and I have to do my canceling of my goal, and, I notice the fear I feel about the planet and how it was a New York Times article. Was it Times? I forget. Anyway, by a man who simply said, yes, we could come out of this, but the cohesiveness is lacking. The global agreement that there is a problem that we could address and fix is a problem.
Right.
And we are so accustomed to our convenience, the convenience of disposables and plastics. He was pessimistic, and he said, I know I'm being pessimistic, but I'm not sure we're going to do this. I'm just not sure.
Right.
And so I'm dragging around doing worksheets that just go over the same material and have the same giving up of the goal and allowing and letting and setting myself up in a active present love and realizing I don't know anything, but then I have to do it all over again. So comment, please.
Well, did you notice that little piece of denial there as you described it, the scenario?
No.
I'm not sure I've got the words exactly, but how those single-use bottles.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure whether it was the word fear or anger, but make me. Angry.
Oh, yeah.
Anger
if
word.
I said
You're
make
angry.
Me, I get it. If I said make
no.
me, yes. Okay. So.
Well, and it may not even
have
been exactly the words make me, but the implication was that I have anger about that. And, you know, the reminder once again that I have anger because there's anger. And, you know, if you go back to Yeshua, you know, they asked him, and I think it'd be similar to your question here. Well, you know, I've done this worksheet 7 times. Isn't that enough?
No.
And he said, no, some of them you'll do 77 times 70.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I accept that.
And it's going to happen.
Mm.
As I clean out whatever that's about for me, I'll come to the point, and that doesn't mean that I then go, oh, well, single-use bottles, what the heck, and smile
mm-hmm.
about it. I can still walk over to the person, and, you know, I might just be guided. I might really, because my hostility is out of the way around that issue, I might be guided to walk over to somebody, say hello, and, gee, you know, you look like you got a store. Yeah, oh, yeah, business is good. That's great. You know, that's a lot of water. Have you ever looked at, you know, maybe putting in a really good filter system would give people higher quality water and, you know, and who knows what you might contribute to the whole process and change? Who knows what chain of events you might start with one conversation with somebody at Costco next week? I don't know. But while there's hostility coming up, while there's still hostility playing out from within, it will still create that state, you know, that Paul talked about is, you know, and I think he saw his own life through this. We see as though through a glass darkly. There's a shadow over our guidance. There's a shadow over truth. And the forgiveness is about removing the shadow. And when I think about, you know, I go back in my family system. I mean, my family was a decent family, good people, you know, all good people. But if I think about them, anybody within my family system, aunts, uncles, cousins, I think about them and it's like there was nobody that had a clue what it meant to function as love. They were loving people, you know, what people call loving. But I don't think there was one of them that ever could have languaged that they were love or that they were designed to function as love. And, you know, I look at the family history of hostility, and I look at the family history of alcohol, and it's like, you know, it was pretty bizarre. And so if I'm the recipient of those genes, if I'm the recipient of every adaptation to a fear-based mind, you know, you look at the process they call evolution, and there's an animal and it learns something and it survives better because it learns and its offspring has that same survival skill. But if our so-called survival skills are actually skills that destroy us in the end, they might mean short-term survival, but our skills that actually destroy us, then, and I'm the recipient of that, I'm going to have to work through it. And here we are. I mean, that song, how long has this been going on? How long has the crazy destruction been happening, and how widespread has it been? And energetically, in the culture, how deeply embedded is it? Withdrawing yourself from it. I mean, when you open the pathway, you open a gate for everybody, but it's picking on some deep stuff.
It does, yeah. Well, that's a good answer, and it leads to another question.
Go for it.
Well, just before I start the question, I also had to go to Wegmans the other day, and they have created, this is the enlightened goal functioning as far as the use of plastic bags, but it's the same sort of issue. They have created these enormous, maybe 3 feet in diameter, circular signs that they've posted on their grocery cart stalls outside, the carousels where you shove the cart back after you've used them. And on them, in a very light, friendly way, they say, we're selling, I don't know what they say. It was worded beautifully, though, about how about using these reusable bags. We're selling them, and they have stacks of them at the registers, and people can buy a bag and use it forever. So they are doing this in the loving way. They're not blaming. They're just saying, guess what we're doing? Why don't you join us? And
cool.
So that, yeah, it's lovely. It was just great to see. And, of course, Costco, they don't, you don't use bags at Costco. You pile your stuff into your car and, so they're already good that way. But anyway, I've labored on that one enough.
So you've been having an impact.
I haven't been having an impact, but somebody
has. How do you know? How do you know that it wasn't your conversation with somebody that got back to the owners of Wegmans and had them make that shift?
Who knows? But, you know, I have been having – I've been going to the management of places, and I did go to the management of Costco, and I said, I noticed you're selling apples in these heavy plastic trays of apples. And the guy said, yeah, it keeps the apples nice, and it's very easy to stack them. And I said, I'm just telling you that – I'm not going to buy apples from you because of that. It's just terribly bad for the planet. And would you consider looking into other ways of selling your apples? And the guy was nice, but he said, oh, well, you know, it's just not cost effective. And that was the end of that. And before that, there had been a letter. And then I went in to speak to him. But I noticed they no longer sell them that way. They now sell them in cardboard trays. So you don't know. That's true. You don't know who's having an impact. Yeah, that's
encouraging. Sounds like a sure thing.
Yeah. So, Michael, question number two. I've been getting ready to go down to be with my two grandsons.
Right.
And the younger one is doing well. The middle one, Jacob, is addicted to weed and alcohol. And I've been listening to Gabor Mate's talks about trauma
he's doing some good stuff.
Oh, man. But the man, what occurred to me, he has this film. You have to pay $15 or something to watch it. Well worth watching. But there is an emphasis on trauma. It just makes me wonder, doesn't make me, I can't watch my language. Yeah.
Good catch.
Yeah,
inspires wondering in you.
It's your fault. it leads me to wonder. I mean, no, that's just as bad, I guess. Anyway, I found myself wondering whether you can concentrate on trauma and dark things and pain and stuff too much. Or I think I already know the answer to it, but I'd love to hear what you have to say. There's something that I felt disturbed by. I'm trying to watch my language and not blame him because he's a very brave man. He lives
to
help
people there
who are homeless. He is out there in a way, and he's helping other people be out there, going up and respectfully speaking to homeless people and offering all kinds of help. He's in really in the trenches, and I found it, I just wanted to get away from that. Now, that's my own denial, I guess. It just seems hard to handle that much concentration on that.
So is there a question behind that?
Sort of. Can you do it too much? Can I do it too much? Can one concentrate on dark stuff too much?
Well, here's my take. I've listened to a few of his things over the years, and I think he's really opening some doors for people and doing some good work. When I look at him physiologically, when I look at his face, he looks, to me, his face looks really sad most of the time.
Sad and tormented.
Like, torment. Yeah, actually, that's a better word. Tormented looks like the word to me. So, you know, Here would be my take. I would love to, and I've thought about, but you know, I've tried this before, and it just seems that getting through to someone on that level and then helping to build the brain cells to even recognize the forgiveness conversation, it just seems like almost futile. And so I haven't made contact with him, but if I had contact with him, I'd be saying, you know, are you an unreformed reformer? Are you carrying pain and trauma about the pain and trauma that you're looking at in the world? And
that's
if so,
exactly,
please
is.
Take this tool of forgiveness and let go of your own pain, let go of your own trauma. And then you become, I think, much more fit to serve those who you're working with bringing out of their trauma. So to me, the objective is to live as love, to live as a human being and walk every minute, every day in that direction. And then notice when you are not and do your work around it. If
that
you
is so good.
Walk in, if you walk into a, let's say you went into a homeless camp,
mm-hmm.
unresolved trauma, and you were there to serve, and you served, and you fed people, and you, you know, maybe helped to clothe people, and you gave money, you know, there'd be a really positive impact. But if you walked into that space with unresolved trauma about homelessness, you would be what Yeshua taught about 2,000 years ago, a house divided against itself. Because on one level, I mean, you're really out there and doing something positive and beneficial for people who just don't know, have anything, any way out that they know of. So you're doing something really positive, beneficial, but if you're doing it out of your own pain, then at the same time, you're just by your presence in the same way, you know, that line in the worksheet that says, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone.
Yeah.
When I choose fear, it wakes up the fear in everyone. When I choose hate, it wakes up the hate in everyone. If I choose rage, it wakes up the rage in everyone. So if somebody walks in and has not resolved their own pain and trauma around this homeless issue, then on one level they're producing this wonderful result, but on another level they're inspiring a deleterious result.
Yeah,
and
Michael,
so to
you
me,
said... Go ahead. You said you have thought of contacting him, but it felt futile. Why?
Because what I've found is that people who are working on, I mean, he's a brilliant man, and I admire him deeply.
Yeah.
And to start a conversation with someone in that mode who already has a mechanism for handling trauma that he feels is effective, my experience has been that to bring someone who's in that posture forward into this understanding of forgiveness is just such a long, hard road that it's, as I said, futile. Now, I have been, you know, with Elon Musk being in the mix recently with buying Twitter and all, we've actually been watching,
yeah.
I've listened to a few interviews of Elon Musk, and I'm seriously considering contacting him because one of the things most of the interviews, I know there's some negative publicity about him, he's done some crazy things, but I don't know anybody who hasn't, including myself. But you know, most of his conversation begins and ends with, and I want to help the world. I want to help the world. I watched an interview with him in his childhood, and, you know, he said, I just had these stream of ideas continuously, and I was really weird. I was a nerd because nobody else thought that way. I got bullied. I got beat up. And all I want to do is help people. You know, that seems to be a really powerful phrase for him, and help the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, his conversation moves in one of the things that I heard him say, and Jeannie and I actually watched a video on him last night. I asked Jeannie, do you mind if we watch this? Because I want to learn more about this guy. But he had spoken about how the problem with the world is people just don't change their minds.
Wow.
And that is a problem. And the difference between approaching him and Gabor Maté is Gabor Maté, to me, already has a solution, and I think it would take eons to get him to understand forgiveness the way we're understanding it from Yeshua. But I'm thinking that Elon Musk, you know, and if I contacted him, I contacted him, and I'm seriously considering doing this with a conversation about, you know, I heard an interview where you said people just don't change their minds. And I know your whole shtick is technology. Did you know that there's an ancient technology for how to do that? And it works? And I think he'd get it.
Oh, wow.
And if he got it, he'd bring it into the world in a way that, you know, just been playing at.
Boy,
so that
boy.
Would be the difference
He's
for me, why I probably wouldn't go and talk to Gabor Maté, but I think I could have a sensible conversation. He's got the brain cells for technology and the desire to help and the belief that people can't change their minds, because by and large, that's true. Most people are running on a track, and that track doesn't change. You know, the inertia-bound ego is running its game. But I think he'd hear the technology aspect of how the mind works and how forgiveness works, and that people can be taught to change their minds.
Michael, I hereby commission you to make that call, and I have no authority whatsoever. But this sounds like such a great idea, a great and needed idea, and a possible opening that could really cause a massive shift.
Well, in a heartbeat, of course, he could say, Gabor's manuscript translated. How many translators do you need? Okay, get them. Go. You know, I mean, he could do that sort of thing. And I'm just listening carefully to his conversations to see if, you know, the opening would be there, that his brain cells would be ready for it. And I'm thinking, especially after watching last night's movie. Yeah, I think so, too.
Oh, my God, it's very exciting. Whoa. Well, and that's such an exciting thought. Okay, well,
and
that's an exciting thought.
In this video we watched last night, they were taught. It was some stuff about his personal life too, and apparently he's been through quite a bit of trauma and pain as a kid, and relationship with his dad. Mm-hmm. He'd understand the power of person dynamic in a heartbeat. He's had some sour relationships with women, and so I think, you know, there'd be an opening for healing through relationships, the commitment, the forgiveness. It just seems that, you know, there perhaps is a right field there. And
wonder what the best way to contact him would be, because he's probably inundated with people wanting to talk to him.
Yes, it would be.
So maybe you could get a hot air balloon and float down over his roof or something. I mean, just get some attention somehow. Wow. It's a great idea.
Well, I've been thinking about that and formulating it, and so far my thinking would be to bounce off of that line where he said people don't change their minds, and, you know, offer him that there is an ancient Aramaic technology that teaches people exactly how to do that, and, you know, is there an interest? And then I'd lead with the power person dynamic, because that's, I think, would be with his relationship with his dad, would be an opening that he'd understand that power person stuff.
Anyway,
hold the space for that if anybody else is listening and it makes sense. Hold the space for that, or maybe somebody's on here that, you know, they're buds. Maybe they know him. Would love to have a conversation.
I just sent you an email. I did a Google search of contact Elon Musk, and it gives an address to write to him, and it says you can also reach out to him on his Twitter account. And so I sent that to you.
Cool.
Woo! Okay.
All right. And if you want to watch the videos, the documentary on him, if you've got Amazon Prime, it's on Amazon. We watched it last night.
Oh, wow. What's the name of it? Of course, you don't probably have to know the name, because it's just on him.
If you just go to Amazon Prime and put in Elon Musk, it's the first one that comes up. It's just Elon Musk documentary.
Okay.
And it goes into his professional life and, you know, his childhood a little bit, and his relationships. And it's an interesting guy. The one, and I can't even tell you. It was one I accidentally came across when he started, this whole conversation started about Twitter. It kind of caught my attention. And I just did a couple of searches and I found one that he's talking about the way that his, as a kid, he just was like, I couldn't stop it. It was like there was a river flowing in my mind. It was just idea after idea after idea. It's just, and I was odd. I was weird. You know, I thought there was something wrong with me because nobody else did that. Nobody else had that happening. So it was an interesting,
interesting
starting point for a kid. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Human life expressing.
Wow. Wasn't it Elon Musk, the real life Iron Man?
That's it, the real life Iron Man. That was it, sweetie, yes.
Wow.
And to tie it back in again to this whole conversation, here's Yeshua saying, a house divided against itself can't stand. And that's just, you know, if I walk into a situation with a solution to a problem, but I haven't applied that solution in my own mind, then on one level where I'm a creator through the unconscious, I'm supporting what it is that I'm trying to fix. And that's the dilemma that Yeshua was talking about of a house divided against itself. And so, you know, the whole old idea, you go back to the scriptures, is healer, heal thyself, physician, heal thyself. And if you haven't healed yourself, then you're creating the disease that you're trying to resolve. And, you know, it's a tough way to go with that kind of a division.
Thanks
of creative power.
Thanks for unmuting me, Jeannie. I have these new hearing aids, and if I touch my ear, it hangs up. So I have to learn to not touch my ears while I'm on the phone. Anyway, I missed a little bit, but I think I got your gist, Michael, which leads me to another question, and I know we're running out of time. Does anybody
else
have a hand up?
Go for it. We've still got 10 minutes.
There's nobody else with a hand up.
Okay. Well, this trip to my grandson, one thing that Gabor Maté said that has been hugely helpful is that since trauma is the cause of addiction, at least as far as he can see, he says it makes no sense to tell a person to stop drinking, smoking, / whatever they're doing.
That's right.
He said, and then I watched how he interacts with people, and it's always to go with a tender-hearted regard for the person back to the time when the damage started being done, if you could get there, and then being with them, and the addiction will or will not take care of itself. He doesn't say it's guaranteed, but he just doesn't focus on, he just makes the space. And I'm so excited about having that as a way of being with Jacob, because he has many times he said, I want to stop. I really want to stop, but then I just can't stop. And I'm thinking he has reasons for not stopping. And I'm hoping that we'll do worksheets together down there. We're going to go for long walks because he has a dog that pulls so hard that I'm not allowed to walk the dog. So he has to walk with me if I'm walking the dog and do the dog. So, and when we're walking, he loosens up and talks. I had this here when he was here. We had great talk as we walked. So I'm just hoping for that. But to not have a fix-it attitude or any kind of blame or any kind of, well, why don't you just stop type of thing is just off the table. And it's such a relief not to have to fix him.
Right. Well, if you remember, you know, from the opening of the intensive that you did at Heartland, the part of the opening presentation I do is always the reason why people carry pain around in their lives is because at a time when they experienced this original trauma, it wasn't safe. And until the space, until energetically the space is there, that gateway that's going to yield up that trauma is not going to open. And that's half of the battle is just being the safe space where it can come up, and all it has to do is come up in the space of active present love, and it's dissolved. There's nothing we need to do with it or figure it out or anything else. And, you know, to me, that's the whole bottom line of forgiveness. I cancel the goal. The perception that's based in hidden pain collapses in on itself. The hidden pain, to the degree that I'm willing to open it, exposes itself. If love is present, what's exposed dissolves. That's all. So just being that space and holding that space and opening every conversation possible.
Boy, I would really
That's
love
where the
to
healing happens. Well, you'll really be supported in doing it. Because we'll be holding the space with you.
Thank you. Well, I'm planning to listen to the shows down there. I mean, my whole life is just because of Zoom, and I'm doing all my teaching down there and the radio show, and my routine will probably be very similar as at home. It's just transplanted for a week.
Yep.
So I should be able to be
Sweet
on. And I'd even love to I'd love to have him listen to the show too, but that may not happen, you know. So we'll see.
Well, you can always have it on in the background listening, and he does what he does. If he hangs out, he hangs out.
Yeah, that's true. I always listen through my hearing aids and nobody can hear it, but that's a thought. I wonder if he has a speaker system. Excellent idea, Michael. You thought of it. Thank you. I'll ask him if he has a Bluetooth speaker. Yeah.
And you know, you can just order one for $20 on eBay or what have you, or Amazon, and have one there. So you've got an amplified sound, just links into your phone.
Nice idea. Okay.
Breathing with you. Breathing that into that space where safety is so pervasive in the field that any core trauma that's ready to come up comes up, and he gets to move through it.
Yeah, if you would hold the space for that, that would be so good.
Absolutely. And you might just be aware that there might be some really bizarre off-the-wall stuff surface. And
well,
just
there
be
already
in
is.
A space of embracing that is...
Mm-hmm.
And embracing it, not just in external appearance, but embracing it internally. And some of what he may bring up may be traumas that you haven't dealt with yet in you. And so you're going to be, this is one of the things that I recognize in people who want to teach this work, is you have to process yourself in an instant sometimes, because somebody's going to bring up what you haven't dealt with yet, and you got to process you first.
I had that happen to him, with him years ago when he was little. He would go into these steely-eyed rages that were very quiet. You could just tell that he was off somewhere in some profound judgmental rage, and I would get paralyzed.
Kind of like his great-grandfather?
Yeah, kind of like his great-grandfather. Oh, my God.
Was it great?
Well,
the day you were in the room?
Yeah, my mother's father, yeah. That's true. I never made that connection, because the connection with his own raging dad is so right there, obvious.
Yeah.
Because his dad did that all the time. But what Gabor Mate said, too, that's so good, is he said, an addict is an addict as an act of health. It's actually a healthy thing to try.
It's an adaptation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can say that to Jake. Jacob, do you realize? Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, no, that's okay. We'll continue till it does cut us off, but I just wanted you to know that it's getting close to that. And yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. It is an adaptation. It's a way to survive something that otherwise seems unsurvivable.
Yep, exactly. Okay.
And
thanks
the other thought, I don't know if you've got the Avison back or not, but if you do, I'd suggest you take it down and get his hand in it. Because that hostility and fear, that sympathetic dominance, is one of the things that keeps the flow closed that needs to open for that trauma to be processed.
That's a thought.
Because I could, from what you've told me, I guarantee he's in a chronic sympathetic dominant state. And his hand in the avis will move him into that parasympathetic mode, open circulation that allows those other organs to start to function.
Wow.
So I'll send you, I actually did a practitioner's presentation for Avison last month on that. I'll send it to you and you'll hear what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And I think it'll make sense. And
all right.
It'd be good if you could take it and get his hand in it. All right, young lady. Well, they've let us go well beyond our time limit. So I'm just going to say thank you for the conversation and we cherish you. And I'll send you an email in just a few minutes.
Okay, great. Thanks.